Hello again. Welcome back to a Wednesday edition of Vox Pop. It's WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, collectors, it's the moment you've been waiting for. It's been a while since we've done this program. We welcome back our stamp and coin experts to take your questions. Now, I'll give you the contact information now, and then I'll tell you who is here. Call us at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Tweet us if you wish at WAMCVoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or email voxpop@wamc.org. But the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. First, we welcome back David Tripp. He's the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and The Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and a cartoonist. And nice to have you off the disabled list.
I'm glad to be here.
Back in the starting lineup. Also joining us this afternoon is Bob Scott, our stamp expert and director of the Postage Stamp Department, Bonhams, an English-owned international auction house. Previously, Bob spent 2 years as senior technical specialist at Christie's Auction House and was director of Sotheby's Postage Stamp Department for 7 years. And boy, what a story, Bob, you have to tell about the rarest stamp in the world.
Not to mention the most expensive.
Which just sold for what, $9.5
million? $9,480,000.
Yikes. All right, now this is a...
Plus tax.
This is a twisted tale, and it actually made the press, including our website, back, was it June when this stamps?
June 17th, 4 weeks ago yesterday.
Okay, so you're involved. First of all, how are you involved with the sale of this stamp?
Well, sometime in February, I got a call from the man standing next to me who asked me, what's the rarest stamp in the world, knowing that my answer was going to be the British Guiana 1 cent. And he said, well, Sotheby's have got it for sale.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, it takes it back to my childhood. It is the stamp.
It's the holy grail of stamps, stamp collecting.
Exactly. And The director.
As Bob said to me, he said, it was on the cover of my first stamp book.
Oh, very much so. Very much
so. There you go.
And anyway, the following, I told him, of course, I was interested in having anything to do with it whatsoever. And the head of special projects at Sotheby's, David Redden, called me and asked me whether I'd like to give some help. So I trolled down to Sotheby's on a very frosty morning, I think, sometime in February. And there it was, sitting on a sheet of paper.
Wow.
And I actually got to hold it.
Oh! Didn't that make you a little nervous?
Actually, the funny thing is, no, I'd seen it before. I saw it when I was 8 years old, and it was just amazing to see.
Did it still have your drool marks on it?
Well, yes, exactly.
It made it more valuable.
Once I'd finished drooling,
yeah.
It's the Mona Lisa of the stamp world. There's no other way of describing it. And the question then became, it was February and there was a sale, the sale date was set. It was had to get a catalog together.
And it's a beautiful catalog. And this is your handiwork?
It's a fabulous catalog. I co-wrote the catalog with Selby Kiefer at Sotheby's, who was an absolute dream to work with. And he let me do a lot of things, which was fabulous. I did a lot of research. And the great thing is this stamp hasn't been seen. It hasn't been on display since 1987. It hadn't sold since 1980 when it sold for $935,000.
Wow.
So we now live in the new information age. We had access to genealogical societies. We had access to all the prime material of... So the history of the stamp, from when it was discovered by a schoolboy in 1873, was all the source material was there. So we've probably put together the best accounting of the story of the stamp ever.
And the history of the stamp is amazing. Allegedly only one, or at least one that we know of.
Only one has ever been discovered.
And
which, considering the number of years, 150 years... since it's been discovered, it's pretty remarkable.
I think it's a fairly good chance that a second one isn't coming to market at any
time. Never say never. By the way, number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We're here with David Tripp and Bob Scott. And Bob was one of the leads here on the Sotheby's a beautiful catalog. Can you buy these catalogs?
Oh, yes, you can.
The British Guyana World's Most Famous Stamp.
Yes, the softbound catalog, I think, still only about $20, and I think the hardbound is $30 or $40.
Very impressive. All right, tell us quickly, before we get to the phones, about the history of this stamp. I understand that they were concerned at the post office, and so they had the postmasters initial them? Is that
the postmasters initial them? First of all, it's an octagonal stamp. It's magenta in color. Magenta is actually quite amusing because the color magenta didn't exist until 1863, whereas the stamp predates it by 7 years.
Ah.
So originally it was a red stamp. It was crudely printed by a local newspaper printer. It was signed, because it was a very simple printing, it was signed to protect against counterfeiting. The initials on this stamp are EDW, standing for Edmund Dalzell White, which is a piece of information we managed to glean over the few months.
Important information. This could have been a counterfeit, right?
I don't think anybody did. Nobody's found a counterfeit of any of the issues from British Guyana from the time. People have counterfeited them since. But in 1856, I think people had better things to do in a basically tropical country where the temperature never really drops below 80 degrees and it's hot and humid all the time. So sitting around with printing presses trying to forge stamps.
No, but what I mean is this hadn't been seen for 30 years, but you know the pedigree was true, and this was the real McCoy.
The real way you know is not by looking at the front of it. It's by looking at the back.
Okay, and what's special about the back?
The back is every owner who has owned it since 1878 has left their mark, either by hand stamp or signature. Every single owner, every single purchaser and one of the keepers of the stamp have left their mark on the back.
Now,
and they're all described
mark.
In the catalog.
Now, that's counterintuitive. I mean, you're told sort of from collecting stamps early on, you don't mark them. You don't do that.
And with coins, if you were to mark the surface of the coin, you'd immediately get and the value would drop.
But because of the fame of this stamp, that's a good thing?
That's an exceedingly good thing. The authenticating back stamps on stamps on the side you don't look at are very common, and some of the greatest collectors have their own marks. Some of the greatest experts have their own marks. So they actually tell a story in and of themselves.
So a child found this, a young collector found this in the 18...
A 12-year-old Scottish, he's not Scottish, we found out he's actually Welsh, schoolboy, who was living in Guyana, British Guyana, which is on the east coast of South America, was running through some papers of his uncle, a man by the name of Andrew Hunter. We know this. And he found this one example. And
how much did he sell it for?
Well, he thought it was an ugly stamp. In fact, he wasn't the only one of the owners that never thought it was terribly pretty. He sold it to a real young Scotsman for 6 shillings. So essentially $1.44.
Oh, well. So that's a good investment. But no matter how you work that out.
But even as a child, that was him as a child. He lived a very long and healthy life. He was actually talked to in the 1930s.
Oh,
when
he must have been pleased.
It was coming up for sale again, but this time it was being offered for $35,000.
Mm.
So, yes, he gave it away for nothing.
Am I right in saying that every time this stamp has come to auction, it has broken the previous world record?
Every time.
And
that's
so
astonishing.
How many owners have there been?
I think we're up to about 8, 9.
Only 8 or 9 in all this time?
8 or 9. I mean, dealers have owned it in certain periods. I could tell you exactly.
But it's fascinating that, particularly in the coin business, where we see coins bought and sold in a matter of 2 or 3 years, that a coin of this importance and magnitude has basically been a collector-to-collector situation,
yeah.
which actually I think is healthy. I hate all the flipping of coins, if you'll pardon the pun.
No, I understand. But this is fascinating. The most
Bob
recent
is sitting here counting on his fingers.
The new owner is the 11th owner,
and the most recent one, or one of the most recent ones, ended up accused of murder, convicted, and died in prison, right?
John DuPont of the...
And he was a DuPont.
A DuPont. Amazing. DuPont, and it was DuPont money that bought it in 1980. But yes, he shot a man by the name of I think his name was Dave Schultz.
So didn't his heirs say, hey, even though he was a murderer, we're entitled to this?
I think his heirs definitely said we were entitled to it. Unfortunately, John DuPont's will didn't leave it to his heirs.
So
he was married only briefly. He had no children, but other members of the family contested the will. I think the biggest beneficiary of his will was a Bulgarian wrestler and his family.
Well, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Makes perfect sense.
Makes sense to you,
doesn't as
it?
One does.
Well, on that interesting note, let's take a break and then we'll get to the calls. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. David Tripp is here, Bob Scott, and your calls, and I promise we will get to them next.
Support for WAMC comes from Laurie Stillwell, CPA, PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. Washington County Tourism, presenting farmers markets, U-Picks, roadside farm stands, farm wineries, distilleries, and breweries throughout the county. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Mohawk Preserve, New Paltz, with a summer calendar of weekly group hikes, volunteer fairs, classes, public programs, and special events. MohawkPreserve.org/events for information. And Tanglewood, the summer home of the Boston Symphony Orchestra in the Berkshire Hills, presenting German conductor Christoph von Dohnányi and baritone Thomas Hampson in music of Strauss, Copland, and Beethoven, July 18th, tanglewood.org.
Well, we've had it story time. Now let's get to the calls. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. David Tripp, we'll call him, and Bob Scott here. Let's go to Ellen in Goshen. Ellen.
Hello.
Ellen.
Hello.
Hello, Ellen.
No, it's not Ellen. It's Trudy. Hello, Trudy. Oh. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Hi, Trudy.
I'm in Kingston, New York.
Sorry about that. I apologize. Wrong name on the list. You go ahead.
Okay. My question is, my husband died in 1984. He was a very casual collector of coins. He filled some of the blue books, and he had a whole stack of Eisenhower coins and, you know, a lot of miscellaneous things as they turned up in his pockets, I think. What can I do with them? How can I find out whether any of them is worth anything, and how do I dispose of them?
Well, the easiest thing to do, if you've got the penny books, the blue binders, and so forth, condition.
Right.
If he went through his pocket change and simply put things in there, the odds are, unless he bought the few rare dates of each series, that there's going to be a great deal of value.
Right.
So I would look to see if the condition is there, if they look fresh in any way, shape, or form. The other thing, if you're near a library, go in and get something called the Guidebook to United States Coins.
Yes.
And it's called the Red Book. Very simply will give you the scarcer dates of each type, and it gives you a rough idea of the value. That's the simplest way of doing it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Eisenhower dollars, for the most part, they melt. The silver value of them is about $6.50 or something like that.
Well, that's not too bad.
And
no.
Well, as the more you, and anything that's made of silver, don't forget, silver is $20 an ounce. So a Kennedy half dollar is going to be worth $7.50.
Mm. Okay.
So you can start adding it up that way. And if there's anything that seems to be of any particular interest in there and you're a little bit curious about, we'll be giving you the contact information at the end of the show. Do not hesitate to let us know, and then we can guide you to the best way to sell it. Because if you do find some things that do have some significant sale value, then we'd probably suggest an auction venue for you, or we can give you the names of dealers who are honest, which is rarer than the coins.
That's been my concern. That's why I haven't done anything with them.
But we're happy to guide you as best we can.
Well, tell you what, David, let's get that contact information out there now. We'll do it again.
Sure. It's Coin and Stamp Guys, the way it sounds, at Berk.com. And the phone number, Bob?
Do you want to do it? Because I'm not quite sure how often I'm going to be there.
We'll just do
it. Email is good, right?
Email is
by far
and the
best
way.
Trudy, thanks a lot for the call. And now, without further ado, we go to Ellen in Goshen. Sorry to leave you on the line there, Ellen.
Oh, that's okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Hello, Ellen.
Yes.
We're all set.
Everything's fine. Good. I have a stamp collection that was given to my father, and that was 50 years ago. And it's basically been put up on a shelf in the closet and hasn't been looked at for 50 or 60 years. I know there's hundreds of stamps in there. And my question is, how would I go about getting it valued, if it has any value at all?
Probably the first most important thing is, tell me something about the collector. Who put it together?
I would have no idea. I'm sorry. I don't even have the actual stamp collection in front of me right now, and I have no idea where my father got this.
Okay. Well, we probably can't. Stamp collections form into many, many, many categories. Stamp collecting is so popular that it was reckoned up to about 10 years ago that one in every seven households has a collection, and most of them are schoolboy collections. And that would make about, 30, 40, 50 million collections?
Yes.
And 90% of them have no value whatsoever. What you first got to look at is you want to know when the albums are wonderful things. They're chronologically ordered. You can tell quite easily where the earliest stamps are, when the latest ones are. So you get a beginning date and you get an end date. Then you need to check whether they're predominantly used or unused.
So are they canceled?
Right. Yes, exactly. Now, because there are so many brands of albums, they usually fall into two categories. They're specialized albums or they're what's known as junior volumes. Now, if it's within the last, we know it's over 50 years. If it's a junior volume, leave it on the shelf. That's probably the best thing to do. If it's a specialized album, if it seems to have, let's say, more than 30% of the pages with some stamps on them, then it's probably worth having an inquiry. But if it's just odd stamps here, there, or everywhere, just leave it on the shelf.
Well, how do you know that there wouldn't be a rarity among the you know, chaff?
Well, we
maybe
know
there's that second stamp that we're looking
you
for.
See, that's it, Alan. That's what I'm talking about.
That's it. Because if collectors are going to go to the point of buying a stamp album, it means they've taken the first great step to stamp collecting, and it means they've tried to put things in the right place. And the first thing that a stamp collector does when he gets a stamp that's different, he finds out what it is.
Yeah.
And the albums make it very easy. If you're just collecting sporadically, you're putting an odd stamp in, you can tell just by looking at the volume. That's your easy answer. If there's lots and lots of stamps in there, if they're predominantly unused, if they're really nicely organized, you're probably talking about something that has some value.
And you can always scan a page
and of course, you can
one of these albums.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And JPEG it to us if there's any question.
Everybody's got a camera on their phone now.
Yeah.
Take a couple of pictures. It's the easiest thing
JPEG
in the world. Usually just a frontispiece and a couple of random pictures, and I'll be able to tell you within $5 pretty much what it's worth.
Wow, amazing.
Okay, that's a great idea, and I would just scan it to the email address that you
exactly
had just given.
Absolutely perfect.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, what about the hinges? Now, in the old days, when I had every kid, as you say, had a stamp collection, and I had one, We put hinges up right on the back.
Oh, yeah.
And isn't that a value killer?
That's an absolute. If it's an unused stamp, then that's a killer because it disturbs the gum. Personally, I think it's rather ridiculous, but it's a way of differentiating.
The perfect stamps.
Yes. My stamp's new. Your stamp's new, but mine's newer than yours is.
Yes. Okay.
But I pulled off a stamp from a hinge from a $9.5 million stamp.
Oh,
so
well, there you go. You see,
and I stuck it back on
again.
And where
was the album then?
Let's go to Jake and Acker. Jake, you're on. Hello, Jake. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, let me turn the radio down.
10-4. Some CB lingo while we're waiting.
Yeah, I have a silver dollar, yep, but I'm sure it's never been used, which is 1878.
Okay, that's the Morganhead dollar.
And it's never been cleaned.
Good boy. That's what we like to hear.
Don't put polish on it.
Do not put polish on it, whatever you do. It's the first year that they made them, and they're generically called the Morgan dollar by the designer's name, George Morgan.
All right.
And in absolutely pristine, uncirculated condition, you're probably looking at somewhere from $75 upwards. That would be an uncirculated example. If it's there are various varieties, the number of tail feathers on the eagle on the back, which you would have to count very carefully, and it can make a difference. It can double the value of the coin. There are, if it was made in San Francisco, I don't know, do you have the coin in front of you?
I do. I'm holding it now.
Well, if you, by the edges only, I hope, if you turn it over, yes. And does it have a tiny little S under the eagle's tail feathers?
No,
there's nothing there. So it means it was made in Philadelphia, and that's better than having an S because San Francisco is not worth as much money.
Okay.
So if you count the tail feathers, and we're not going to do it on air.
No, that's a great idea, David.
Because we would have a slight snoring time. But yeah. If it happens to be an 8 tail feather or 8 over 7 tail feathers, it can be worth $1,000, maybe even $2,000.
Okay,
but figure out more.
Yeah, this has many feathers. It's not. You know, like the feathers are many.
It's the tail feathers right underneath the eagle. It's the I don't know what they're called from an ornithological standpoint, but they're the tail feathers.
That's the bird show. We're not doing that today.
Thank you.
Jake, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Now, David, a Victoria Cross sold, and in the notes you gave
yes.
me, this was a big deal. $700,000.
$700,000. Yeah, that is phenomenal price. It's the most ever paid in England for a Victoria Cross.
So. This falls sort of into your expertise?
Yeah, it's a fascinating area. The Victoria Cross is the highest award for valor or gallantry that the British Army can give.
Okay. And
the first ones were issued during the Crimean War in 1856. And since that time, with all the wars and the British Empire, only 1,400 people, slightly under 1,400 soldiers, have been awarded.
And an awful lot of them have been dead at the time.
Yes.
A lot of posthumous awards.
A lot of posthumous ones. It's a very simple award. It's the equivalent of America's, what we call the Congressional Medal of Honor, mm-hmm. which is technically the Medal of Honor. The big difference between the two is owners of the Victoria Cross are allowed to sell theirs.
Wait, you cannot sell the U.S. Medal of Honor?
You cannot.
No, what happens if you do?
You are arrested.
You're kidding me.
No, I am not kidding you. There's a $100,000 fine.
Your own property, you are not allowed to sell?
You are not allowed to sell. Mm-hmm. You can't even, what's phenomenal to me is that the idea was when they have something called the Stolen Valor Law. Basically, people saying that they had been given the medal and were wearing it, and people, because it is such an important award, and you know these are America's heroes or British heroes, you know the theory is that if you were wearing one on the subway, someone would give you their seat, effectively. But it was the idea that people were, it's not unlike identity hijacking.
I see.
Identity theft. And the government has come down very hard on it.
They've prosecuted these cases in the past?
And there's a $100,000 fine if you're caught selling one.
Wow.
What amazes me is, though, the Congressional Medal of Honor, the Medal of Honor, was first given during the Civil War, and even those cannot be sold, which amazes me.
Yeah,
which
very much so.
Me.
Let's go to line 3 and Kevin in Stanfordville. Kevin, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Actually, one of your previous callers kind of answered a lot of my questions about stamps.
Mm.
And really all I need is if you could repeat the contact information.
Oh, all right. Let's do that again.
It's Coin and Stamp Guys, the way it sounds, at Berk, BERK.com.
Coin and Stamp Guys.
At Berk, BERK.com.
BURK?
BE. As in Berkshire.
Oh, I see. BERK.com.
Right.
That's right.
Do you know anything?
All right, very good. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, Kevin.
That was easy.
Thanks
that was
very
easy.
Much. All right, then. Jack in Selkirk. Jack, you're on.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have a question about a postcard I came into. It's on the front. It's got a picture of the Hindenburg somewhere in Germany.
Okay.
On the back, it's got two stamps of the Hindenburg as well.
Are they regular postage stamp size?
They are, yes. One's 75 Deutsch
marks, and the other one's a 50?
Correct.
And one's blue and one's green?
Yep. In the top left, on the back of the card, it says, First flight via airship Hindenburg, Frankfurt, Maine, to Lakehurst, New Jersey.
Yeah. About $80.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because it's a nice.
I'm sorry.
No, sorry. It's a nice picture card. It's one of the earlier Zeppelin stamps issued by Germany. When you get a little, this is from the mid to late 1920s, 1927 possibly.
Well, it's hand canceled on the front where my father lived in Kingston at the time. The date on it is 1933.
Oh, it's the later one. I'm sorry. It's about $80 to $100. If it had the U.S. stamps on it, from the Chicago exhibition, it would have probably worth about a 50% premium on that. If it had been the previous set of stamps from the 1930s, probably would have been worth somewhere around $300 to $400. And if it had been to some exotic location like Singapore or Australia, then you could have been talking $5,000 or $6,000.
What if it had been flown on the Hindenburg?
If it had been crashed on the Hindenburg in 1937.
No, this is the truth.
If it had been crashed on the Hindenburg, it would be worth $8,000 to $10,000.
Wow.
Bob has sold envelopes that were recovered.
If they're charred around the edges, because they picked up all the mail when the Hindenburg went down on May 6, 1937 in Lakenhurst, and they returned as much as they could to the people that they were sent to.
Neither wind nor rain nor exploding Zeppelins will keep us from our
appointed newsreel. Yes.
Jack, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by coin and stamp experts David Tripp and Bob Scott. And back to the phones we go. Mariana in Shelburne Falls, you're on.
Hi. I have a couple of coins here that I've had hanging around, and one of them is a 1898 penny.
Indian head penny with an Indian with the feathers.
Right.
And then the wreath on the back.
Yes.
What kind of condition is it in?
I think it's pretty good. I mean, I think it's been used. I don't use it. I have it sitting.
Well, if you had used it, you probably wouldn't have it anymore.
No, I mean, I don't handle it very much is what I mean.
Okay. So we'll say it's sort of average worn condition.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's not exceptionally rare. They were made in large numbers and is probably, we'll say, average worn condition, $2.50 to maybe up to
$7. Okay. I like it. You know.
Well, keep it. That's wonderful. The design is by a man named Longacre. And it's one of the first coins that showed America's pride in our indigenous population.
We used to see those all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You get them in the store.
Find them in the change. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Showing your age, though, right?
Well, right you are. All right. go ahead, Mariana.
I have one other penny question. Mm-hmm. I have several. I think they're 1940s, 43.
The zinc pennies.
The zinc ones.
The steelies, as we call them, which are actually zinc-coated steel. Those were made during the war because there was such a demand for copper for munitions and so forth that the supplies were put into the war effort. And as a result, the government had to find something else to keep making money. And so they used these steelies, as they call them, for only the 1 year, 1943. A few from the previous year had gotten jammed, the blanks had gotten jammed in the machines, and they ended up getting struck in copper in 1943. And if you find one of those, you could be looking at up to $1 million.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
really?
The bane of the coin world,
really. Yeah.
Like every time one sells.
Yep.
I'll keep looking.
Okay, we'll do that.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Keep on doing what you're doing.
We're trying.
Thank you.
Let's go over to line 2. Robin in Old Chatham. Robin, you're on.
Hi.
I
have a nickel.
Okay.
And it's a partial face of side view, and it's on the left side of the coin, and all the writing is on the right, In God We Trust, and 2005, but it says Liberty in script.
Okay. This is one of the more modern issues with Thomas Jefferson.
Yes.
And they started redesigning the coins, I believe, in 2003, 2004, in anticipation of the bicentennial of Lewis and Clark.
Was yes. It? No.
Yeah.
That's what it says on the back, 1805, Lewis and Clark.
There we go. And that was, it's basically a redesign. In fact, I was fortunate enough in the early days to be on something called the Citizens Coinage Advisory Committee, and a group of people that advised the U.S. Mint on the coin designs. And I was down in Washington as they were developing these particular coins.
So it's your fault.
It is my fault indeed. Unfortunately,
they
are beautiful. Well, thank you, because I was one of the advisors.
I mean, the reverse side has a nice picture.
Thank you, Mrs. Tripp.
Ocean in view. Oh, the joy.
There we go.
Well, that's great. Are they worth anything?
They are not worth much. No, they are nickel. You can spend them, and if it's in really absolutely pristine condition, maybe it's worth a dollar.
Oh, good point.
Yeah,
that's
but they
right.
are. Yeah.
A dollar right now might be $2 in 20 years.
Exactly.
Well, in that case, I'll save it.
I think that's a good idea.
Robin,
thanks so much.
Okay,
thank you very much. Perfect timing, Mr. Zach the engineer. Yes, it's time for a break. More calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. Unison Arts, New Paltz, presenting the year-round Unison Woodland Sculpture Garden and Main Gallery Exhibition of Hannah Eschel's Fishers through August 24th, unisonarts.org. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting A View from the Shore, Winslow Homer's Impressions of the Coast, wood engravings and etchings made after Homer's paintings, now through August 24th, arkellmuseum.org. And the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, now offering legal help for veterans serving the public for over 30 years, nysba.org/lawyer-referral.
+1 800-348-2551 is our telephone number, and it is Vox Pop. It is a Stoin.
Stoin and Gamp.
Stoin and Cam. It's a coin
Stoin
and stamp
and
show.
Yes.
Dirty. Let's go to the phones. John in Albany. John, you're on.
Hey, guys. Serendipitous that you're actually on with this topic. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who recently had his father pass away and left him what is a very substantial coin collection. This is essentially a hobby that he had undertaken for his entire life since childhood. And it is a massive collection, mostly foreign coins, some paper money.
Right.
It's kind of impractical to take it to an appraiser, but he definitely needs and wants to get it appraised, maybe with the eventual goal of either selling it or holding on to it so he knows what he has.
Right.
And, if you guys have any tips as to what I can maybe relay to him, that'd be great.
Well, sure. The first thing to do is if you can prepare some sort of a list, if your friend can prepare some sort of a list to give us an idea of sort of the period that the material was made. If it's all modern material, like the nickel we just discussed, there's not going to be a great deal of value, needless to say. But if it's mid-19th century or earlier, it has a different...
It ranges, and he took meticulous notes as far as values are concerned or whatnot, but it's all based on personal notes and not necessarily can be, treated as like an official price.
Well, we're not looking for official prices, but if your friend can sort of transcribe the stuff, put it into an email version so that we know that it says England, penny, shilling, whatever,
sure.
and a rough idea of the dates, that'll give us a very, very good start to what it looks like, and then we can give you some suggestions as to whether it seems to be auctionable or whether it's the best thing to hold on to or sell privately, because there are always grandchildren out there that are going to be coming along, and you never know when
right.
one of them might get interested.
Yeah.
Right. So you're saying if you did 210, sell it, an auction would be a good...
Auction is a great way. Condition is, in the coin world, condition is everything these days. To give you an idea... a common $20 gold piece that is worth, let's say, $1,300, that gold melts at $1,300, a common $20 gold piece would sell for $1,330, not a great deal more. But if it's in pristine condition, it can sell for $50,000 or $60,000.
Mm.
So it really is condition-based.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Complete opposite of those Hindenburg covers.
Okay, exactly.
Sean, thanks a lot for the call. We go over to, let's see, Honeyball in Chelsea. Are you on?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. American Eagles, silver or gold, what is the best buy, a proof or uncirculated?
Well, it's the difference is fairly minimal. They're basically both bullion coins, and their value is always going to be a small percentage above bullion. So, you know, to give you an idea, in silver, a 1986, I'm just looking at the sheet here, 1986 in mint condition is worth $37. In proof condition, it's worth $53. So there's not a big spread between the two, and you're basically buying the metal itself. So, from
so the
my
proof has more metal?
No, a proof doesn't have more
metal.
So
it has a little more value.
But it has more value, but you're also going to be paying more to the mint. The mint's not going to charge you the same price.
Okay.
So you've got to remember the mint is the biggest coin dealer in the world.
All right, fair enough.
Yes.
So my theory is try and get it as close to scrap weight as possible because the aftermarket, generally speaking, is going to discount the way it's made. But again, how well it's preserved is going to have all the difference in the world.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
The proofs have a better presentation.
They do. They're much nicer looking pieces, but people don't spend multiples of multiples. I mean, even if you were to buy proof sets that the Mint issues all the time, they've turned out to be very poor investments.
Okay.
Okay. Can I ask you one more question?
Certainly. Go ahead.
Sure.
Yes. What is the difference between the maple leaf that's got 5 9s and the American buffalo that's got 4 9s?
That's simply the purity of the gold. Okay. So 5 9s means it is the maple leaf is just one how many thousandths of a
it's like 100,000th
finer. And that's simply referring to the purity of the gold.
Okay.
It's about 10 cents an ounce, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Isn't that an old song, 10 cents an ounce?
Yes. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to line one, Charles in Huntington. Charles.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you very much. This is intriguing. My great uncle, perhaps 30, 40 years ago, gave me a number of coins, silver dollars.
Okay.
And I have not looked at them, but listening to your program, I went into my safe and I found them, and just an interesting comment that I did not know, that if you look at the coin and then you turn it north to south, then
it's all upside down.
The image on the back is facing up. If you turn it the other way, of course, it's not. I never knew that.
That is the standard way they make it. It's called a coin turn, and you have a metal turn as well. So if you do the same sort of thing with a metal, heads will be up on both sides.
Ah,
one's for presentation and one's for commerce.
Okay.
Well, what's interesting, I have the one silver dollar is 1950. And it's interesting on how the Liberty, it's a full figure, and then in 1878...
1950, I don't think. That you must have missed.
No, 1850.
1850, thank you.
1850. And it's the full figure sculpture, and then in 1878, it goes to the head.
To the head, exactly. What you have is what's called a seated Liberty design.
Okay.
From the 1850s. And those are more, you know, even you said 1850 is the date on it?
1859.
Well, even a really, really beat up one is worth $250.
Oh. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's in pretty nice condition, it's worth, you know, $400 to $800.
Beautiful.
By condition, this is obviously being silver, but it's dark and it's
don't clean it.
Don't clean it. And then when you go to 1878, the head it goes into a head.
Right. The
and
portrait.
Then I'm looking. It's interesting. In 1920,
21,
they changed the design again. That's what's called the peace dollar, which was at the end of the First World War. So it was an emblematic of peace.
Okay.
And so you can see from 1921 and then to 1922, the head, the face is updated and...
the relief is lowered, yes.
Yeah, and... is there value on like the 1921?
The 21s are indeed more valuable than the 1922s. The 21s are worth probably, you know, can be worth from $100 and up, whereas the 22s are going to be worth about $25 and up.
Okay.
Well, interesting, but it is interesting to have a person not familiar with coins is to be a little bit more observant. And to see the detail that's involved in the evolution of these coins.
Well, if there were more people like you, that we'd have more collectors.
You know, that's a great call. Charles, thank you very much. Let's go to Russ in Waterford. Hi, Russ, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
This is a question. Several years ago, I was at a garage sale, and I actually bought a number of envelopes, and they have foreign paper currency in them. And they're from countries all over the world, some of which I've never heard of. And these bills are various denominations, and they're all in really nice condition, but I wouldn't have a clue. I couldn't even find them on the Internet. I mean, I know they're real. I can tell by the stamping on them and stuff, but how would somebody have someone look at I know you deal in coins, but I mean, is there a market out there for paper currency?
There is a market out there for paper currency, like there is for just about anything these days. I tell you what, if you go through and you, the nice thing about paper money, you can scan it very easily.
Okay.
Scan the ones that look to be the most interesting to you, just one or two scans, and send them to us. So we can give you a good start from there. I mean, it's like anything else. Coins and stamps and paper money all sort of fall together. Bob knows paper money.
What do you have a rough idea of what sort of countries? Can you name a couple of the countries?
There are several, I guess, for lack of a better word, I call them Arab countries. Some of the Arab countries and some of the artwork on these bills is absolutely gorgeous. And then I would say there's some from the Netherlands, there's from, mm-hmm. some from Holland. They just seem to be...
And do you have an idea of when most of them were made? Were they 19th century or are they 20th century?
No, I believe they're 19th century. They're old.
Okay.
That much I do know.
And they're crisp, you say?
They're actually gorgeous. They were put between, I wouldn't call it cellophane, little fine, really thin plastic. Each bill was put in one, and then they were put in various envelopes.
Right.
And the envelopes, I can't make out why they were put in these particular envelopes, just other than storage.
To protect them, yeah.
Hmm.
Well, as I say, if you can scan a few of them and send them along to us, we can give you a starter.
Can some really be worth some good money?
Exactly. Oh,
some
absolutely.
Can certainly be worth it. The thing you run into with banknotes, especially when you get nice little very, very, very fresh notes in envelopes which are circulating, they're usually Philippine notes, they're Japanese notes, German inflationary notes. They're basically all the money that people didn't want or were demonetized, so they actually have no money there.
German inflationary money is, I mean, literally, you had billion mark notes.
Like Confederate money.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. perfect
example is
Confederate
money.
Well, if they're really, really large denominations, they're inflationary issues, and the value is going to be deflationary.
Well,
but the values are better now than they were 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
I mean, people are collecting them. But the wheelbarrows are still more expensive.
Just don't roll up in the bank and expect to get a billion at the current exchange rate.
No, what's the rate on a Kronos rate? Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, Ross, thanks a lot. Let's go to Vince in Whitesboro. Vince, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking the call. My brother-in-law died and left piece some money here with my sister, and she passed it on to me, so I don't know what to do with it. There's probably 50 $2 bills and some Kennedy half dollars and one 1883 silver dollar.
Okay, the 1883 silver dollar we can take care of very quickly. A sort of very average condition, sort of looks like it's been a bit worn.
It's a bit worn, yes. You can read everything easily.
Okay, so that's probably going to be $30 to $35, somewhere in that range. $2 bills, despite the fact that they're fascinating, really are worth $2 to $3.
Series?
Pardon? It depends on the series, probably 1976.
I was going to say 76 or, what is it, 50?
Yeah. They still, at Monticello, Jefferson's house, they still give them as change in the gift shop. So there's not going to be an enormous potential there.
And the Kennedy halves.
And the Kennedy halves, they are silver, and so they're going to be worth at least $7.50 a piece.
Wow. Okay.
Well, all right.
Okay.
Yep, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Vince, thank you very much. Let's go to
Insta Exchange.
Charlotte and Canaan, you're on.
Turn the radio off, Charlie.
Yes, do that.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to find out if it would help me value a 1906 2.5 Liberty gold coin.
Sure.
It's in pretty good condition.
Pretty good. Well, it's gold, so it's nice and shiny anyway. But don't polish it, as I've said for the 99th time today. If it's in average condition, let's say nearly uncirculated, you're looking at about $300 or $400.
Should it, would it be better to save it or to cash it in?
Well, I mean, the smaller the denomination, the less bearing the value has on the movement in gold. It's the big coins, like the $20 gold pieces, which the premium value, the value above
based
gold,
on the value of gold,
moves very, very much in lockstep. With the smaller coins, it's basically more a collector value. Whether you want to keep it or not, that's a personal decision you have to make. But
right.
I can't tell you whether it's going to go up or down in value. Unfortunately, if I did that, I wouldn't need this gig.
Right. And not that you're getting paid for this gig.
I'm all too aware of that, Ray.
We're not getting paid. That's it.
You're
I'm leaving.
You're very kind. Thank
a pleasure.
You
over, Bob. All right. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it, Charlotte. Let's go to Carol in East Chatham. Chatham, is it? Yes?
Hello. Yeah.
Hi.
I have a dollar bill. It says Series 1957A, and I have a more recent one right next to it, and it's quite different. The old one says silver certificate on the top. The new one says Federal Reserve note. The circle under the Washington, D.C. is written over it, and it's blue. The newer one is green. It's a J series rather than F.
Well, yes, I mean, it's a completely different note. One's a silver certificate, and one's Federal Reserve note.
Basically, it means that the Federal Reserve note means that it's just money printed.
Fiat currency.
Fiat currency, yes, thank you. Nice way of putting it.
What kind of currency? I'm
fiat.
Sorry.
It means that basically there's nothing to back it up.
Uh-huh.
Whereas a silver...
But that's another show, by the way.
And right. A silver certificate...
Well, nowadays means exactly the same
means
thing.
Means exactly the same thing, but in theory... with a silver certificate, you could take it to the government and get a dollar in silver in return.
I see.
But they're actually worth $1 a piece.
But they are worth a little bit more. The silver certificates do have a tiny, tiny, tiny premium over silver certificates.
Just right. Tiny, tiny.
Right. Okay. And it's not anything I should save or...
It's not, you know, to me, it's not the sort of thing that is necessarily spendable, as it were.
Uh-huh.
I mean... I'm just going to see if I can do a quick check here. Let's just see if we've got, if somebody vamps for time here.
Yeah, well, the time's running out, so.
Okay, so you'll just shut me off. Small sack. All right. Silver certificate, 1957.
A. 1957A.
Okay. You're probably looking at it maybe $1.25.
Oh, boy. Okay.
All right. Well, Carol, thanks a lot. We're going to go quickly to Lou. Lou and Gilderland, you only have about 20 seconds. I apologize. Go ahead.
Two quick questions.
Shoot.
What's the value of invasion money, gold leaf, gold seal on it, World War II?
Well, World War II is not inflation money. Is
invasion.
It? Sorry?
Invasion.
Yeah, invasion money.
Oh, invasion money? Not very much.
Okay.
Is it? I mean, again, it's a little better than it was, but they're curios more than anything else.
Okay.
Go ahead, Lou.
Shoot.
Second question, quickly, is I understand that stamps were printed in Germany, 30s, 40s, to raise money for various ventures, health and whatever it was.
Yes.
Do these have any value? Can they be sold?
Yes, they are unused. They're called, they're categorized as B-type stamps. They're semi-postals.
Okay.
Part of the proceeds went to, you know, good works. And yes, some of the sets have values. You can go to the library, find a Scott catalog, and look them up.
All right, and we'll get into my potato revenue stamps on the next program. Thanks a lot to David Tripp and Bob Scott. You guys were great. Thanks to everybody who called in on the program. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Support comes from Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA. Thanks again to David and Bob for being here, to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Aubrey Mulvey. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's another thrill-packed edition of Vox Pop at 2 o'clock. Stay tuned now for a news update.